Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your co-host, Adam Richmond, and joining me as ever is the host, Joe Devine. This is the show where we talk about the movies
or
films you forgot you'd even seen in the first place.
He's unstoppable.
He's already piping up. Of course he is, because he's the host. Sorry, what's going on?
Huh? What's happening? What kind of trickery is this? You've called yourself the co-host. You've called me the host.
Well, yeah, it's just putting a name on what everyone is known for a long time. You know, you did break the kind of the contract that we sort of had by naming it.
Did I name it?
Well, you didn't name it. You, last time we recorded a proper episode, well, I can't remember what the film was.
Brokeback Mountain.
Right, and we were playing the box office game. This will be cut. You will have cut this from that episode.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But you kind of broke, I guess, my trust in you, and you pulled my pants down.
I broke your spirit for sure. I didn't really think it would be as fragile as it was.
Well, me.
I thought there was a bit more stiffness in the spirit. I thought your spirit was a few more sticks put together, but it turns out it was just one stick, and I snapped it like a child.
Yeah, so I think we've been going 100 or so episodes. It's been 2 years. It's time to, you know, admit who's really in charge, and that's you, and you're the host, and I'm just lucky to be here.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Joe Devine, and joining me as ever, it's the Leaky Spirit Valve, Mr. Adam Richmond. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, thanks. I've just inherited this new responsibility I'm pretty excited about. What about you?
Well, you know, it's yours. You have it. I sort of feel like there's other things going on in my life, and I'm struggling with the pressure of feeling like I was the host. Yeah. And I can't really handle it anymore. And after what you did on the Brokeback Mountain episode.
Which has been cut.
Which has been cut and will never...
So the listeners don't know.
No, and no one will ever know. You'll know and I'll know. It just feels like... It just felt right, you know, to just hand back the reins. Because obviously when we started this show, you were the host. Didn't work.
Never aired.
But then you were such a big guy about it. You said, oh, do you know what I think... Why it's not working is I think maybe you should be the host, and it was an amazing maneuver, because I thought, oh, hello, okay, yeah, I should be the host. Actually, I've always felt like I should have been the host. It was my idea not to do a podcast. That was your idea.
The thing is, though, like, now that you are sort of saying all of this, I don't really want it, so actually, I think you should probably just carry on, you know.
Okay. I love it when you just know how to play me like a fiddle. So, on today's episode, we are doing Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Oh, indeed. We're doing Indiana.
Indiana. The 2008 Steven Spielberg-directed flick. And obviously, you know, produced by George Lucas.
Right.
They kind of came up with this together back in the day, the whole concept.
I never really understood how they coexisted or what the situation here was. But I knew they were both involved. But okay, it's as you say.
There's many fingers over the story and the script. Lucas came up with the story, and then there are various writers who hopped on it. Doesn't matter, it's boring. It's 122 mins, which is a nice little runtime.
Not terrible.
It does whip along at a decent lick.
It's about 7 minutes too long.
Yeah, 7 minutes too long. It stars Harrison Ford, Kate Blanchett, Karen Allen, Shia LaBeoufs, and Ray Winston, and John Hurt, and Jim Broadbent,
yeah. And Igor Zizhikin, who I've definitely seen in other things.
And Emmanuel Todorov, seen him. Oh, Pasha D. Lynch, Lynchnikov, I've seen him in stuff. He's always popping up, and oh yeah, like he pops up in a Mission Impossible, Bullet Train, Miami Vice, Air Force One. He's co-starred with Harrison Ford in Air Force One. Oh yeah, and he's in A Good Day to Die Hard. He plays the kind of Russian tough, the kind of flat-faced Russian tough guy.
Yes.
In the background. And here's the Letterboxd. The adventure continues. Set during the Cold War, the Soviets, led by sword-wielding Irina Spelko, Kate Blanchett with a very slightly very dodgy
Kate
accent.
Blanchett.
Kate Blanchett. In search of a crystal skull, which has supernatural powers related to a mystical lost city of gold. Indy is coerced to head to Peru. He's always coerced, mate. At the behest of a young man whose friend, young man is played by Shia LaBeouf's, and Indy's colleague, Professor Oxley, that's John Hurt, has been captured for his knowledge of the skull's whereabouts. The plot is very much Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Sure.
And they've just mapped on a crystal skull on top. So this, I got you on this, a bit of a cheat, but I was running low and I did want an excuse to rewatch this. And I know you're a bit chilly on Indy. What did you like about this movie? Come on, don't be... Just listen, it's always fun when when we say nice things about a movie. Like when we, you know, we shit on American Hustle for about an hour and it was really toxic.
Oh, I've got something. At the end, when the flying saucer emerges from the mountainside, I think the CG is actually pretty good, where the massive rocks and pieces of land are spinning around in that perfect circle. And then dropping, I think that actually looks pretty impressive for the time. So I liked that bit.
Are you not an indie guy? When did you first see your first indie? Do you remember which indie it was, and did it? What mark did indie leave on you?
It was one or three. It was Last Crusade or
Raiders.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is the first one, right?
Raiders is the first one. I mean,
yeah.
And you can't remember? Of course you can't.
I had Temple of Doom on video, so I watched that one the most.
Oh, great.
And I remember thinking, I have very fond memories of the bit where they talk about eating monkey brains.
What age are we talking here?
Well, we're talking 10, 11.
Okay. Yeah, just give us a picture, paint the picture.
Right. I mean, I've just made that up. I really don't know. I could have been any age because, as you know, my memory doesn't work. So I could have been 24 years old. I could have been 6. You know, I don't know.
You've got the video, though.
I've got the video, yeah. So that gives you an era.
Yeah, you're probably in Wales. You know,
probably, yeah, maybe just before. Could be. Let's say it's anywhere between 8 years old and 13. Yeah,
great, but it's not that those viewings don't give you residual feelings for indie.
Sort of, you know, a few. That I don't feel hugely nostalgic about it as a series. No. And not in the same way that I do about something like Jurassic Park, for example. But I think that's partly because I never loved Indiana Jones, even as a child. I enjoyed elements of it. I enjoyed elements of the mystery. I loved history and ancient history as a child. So the notion of a sort of an archaeologist wasn't lost on me. But I never fell in love with Indy as a character, I would say.
What about the filmmaking? Like the filmmaking of Raiders and Last Crusade are just, and well, actually also Temple, they're just fantastically made movies. They look gorgeous. Yep. They've got that grainy film aesthetic that you just don't get anymore.
Yeah.
They almost get it here, but it's ruined later on in the movie with the sort of CGI they've shot on a soundstage chase sequence. But when the film begins, the opening, it still feels like Steven Spielberg knows how to shoot and cut a movie.
I would say for my generation, they are, and I don't mean this by definition when I say TV movies. I don't mean they were made for TV.
Right.
I mean that they were on TV every week.
Yeah.
And so they were really not very exclusive, right? Like, as a child, I remember thinking Jurassic Park was a little you know, I remember it being on TV on Christmas Day in 1997 or something, right? Like that was the it's sort of UK TV premiere, and then it wasn't there often. You know, when it came around, it felt like a moment. Whereas I swear Indiana Jones was on ITV from day one, just every Saturday. And so I think maybe part of my lack of enthusiasm for the films is just I'm so familiar with them, you know, in the same way that like the Carry On films were always on TV. But I will say I probably have more nostalgia for Carry On than I do for Indiana Jones, which I think is maybe, saying something.
Yeah, that's sad. I mean, it's a core memory for me going to see Last Crusade at the Wickham Six in 1989.
Did right. that come out? I mean, I wasn't born.
Let's just double check. You weren't born.
You would have been 9 or something.
I would have been 8.
8, yeah.
And I remember it was drizzling with rain and we would have parked. And I remember this long queue out the door and we just walked all past the people queuing and we walked into the cinema. And I just remember that feeling of like, oh, are we special? No, we weren't special. My mum must just have bought us tickets and all those other schlubs were queuing up like idiots. And we went in and I'm 8 years old. I'm in the cinema and it's The Last Crusade.
Sure.
That's it. That's all you need.
The die were cast.
That's Star Wars New Hope for me.
It's your very own Rubicon.
Well, I don't know about that. It's just a formative. I fell in love with going to the cinema.
Yeah.
At that age and that movie. So and it's also a great flick. And then I'm into indie, and they also happen to be great. Those first three movies are great. Great movies. They're so well
made. Undeniably good, yeah.
So I'm the right age, but then for you, they're kind of wallpaper, which kind of makes me sad. But like you could imagine someone like Jurassic Park, the Jurassic Parks now, right? Mm. They're on ITV all the time. Yeah. So imagine someone who's 10 years younger than you saying to you, yeah, Jurassic Park, it's always on ITV. Imagine how would I feel? Yeah.
I think that makes sense. Yeah, they were on TV the whole time. And
right.
You had a different experience.
Where the cup that holds the blood of Jesus Christ resides forever.
The Holy Grail, Dr. Jones. The chalice used by Christ during the Last Supper. The cup that caught his blood at the crucifixion and was entrusted to Joseph of Arimathea.
The Arthur legend. I've heard this bedtime story before.
Eternal life. But there's nothing cool about Indiana Jones. It's a dad movie, really, and then it's either a kid movie or a dad movie. And I was a kid, and now I'm a dad, so it's great. Like I'd take Indiana Jones over James Bond any day of the week.
Yeah,
like,
of course. I can't. I would do the same.
Yeah,
but I don't think that's a difficult battle. Let's do this, though. Okay, so that was the first battle: Indiana Jones versus James Bond. You're taking
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, okay. Indiana Jones versus Han Solo. You're taking
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, okay. Indiana Jones versus Jason Bourne. You're taking
probably Jason Bourne.
Oh, really?
I think so.
How interesting.
Because Jason Bourne he's getting a magazine, he's rolling it up and he's shoving it in a man's throat. And like this one, for example, Crystal Skull. You know, it's fun that there are little jokes, but then some of the jokes are a bit like, all right, come on. Not everything has to be a dad joke in this dad joke movie.
That's true. Okay, fine. Well, that's one. Let's keep going. Indiana Jones versus Rocky Balboa.
Oh, as opposed to Rocky Road Ice Cream.
Horror show.
yeah, obviously Indiana Jones.
Okay, Indiana Jones versus Robin Hood in all of his incarnations.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones versus Peter Pan in all of his incarnations.
Indiana Jones.
Okay, Butch Cassidy.
I mean, just because of the Butch Cassidy flick, and it's Paul Newman. It's Butch Cassidy.
Yeah, okay, fine. Last one, Indiana Jones versus Oscar Schindler.
I mean, it's Indiana Jones because he probably beat the Nazis, whereas Oscar Schindler
beat the Nazis.
He did, you know.
Oscar Schindler was just saving children. Yeah, okay, fine. What about Lawrence of Arabia, you know?
I'm more likely to pop on an Indiana Jones, so Indiana Jones.
That's true. I don't recall in any of the Indiana Jones the 40-minute crossing of the desert, although they are frequently crossing deserts. They do it quite quickly, don't they?
Very dusty. A lot of dust in Indiana Jones.
They just use that little map animation where they go, oh, we've gone 4,000 miles. No big deal. And we haven't introduced ourselves yet. No big deal.
In the world of Indiana Jones.
Tell you what I love about Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Which film is it in which they use a blimp? Is it a blimp? What do they call it? An air?
Yeah, Last Crusade.
Last Crusade. What's it? What's that called? Is it a blimp?
Zeppotron? Blimp? Yeah, blimp.
Yeah. Those, I mean, I really, really wish those had become a more common means of air travel, or more accepted, a safer means of air travel that had survived into the modern era, because they're the most sci-fi thing. They're just the coolest thing. I think they're very exceptionally steampunk, aren't they? Like a blimp thing. It's not a blimp. It's called something else.
Well, the Hindenburg disaster, I think, put paid to that mode of transport. You know, it's a big giant balloon filled with
An airship. A dirigible.
But it's a great sequence in The Last Crusade. Great, fun sequence.
Fantastic sequence.
No ticket.
He's hiding behind his newspaper.
Yeah,
no ticket.
You remember?
Yeah, of course I remember. That's a fantastic scene. Fantastic scene. I agree with you that they're terrific films. Not this one, but the first three are terrific films.
Well, let's dig into... I mean, that's the thing. Maybe we don't need to dig into why
into
this
one
isn't terrific. I mean, because I saw this at the cinema in 2008, and I was surprisingly hopeful and kind of like... so at that point, how old am I? 2008.
You're in your early 30s.
In my early 30s, yeah.
There you go. Do the maths.
Yeah, you've done them for me. So, but I'm old enough to know better, but I'm like, yeah, okay, let's and I went with my old schoolmates from secondary school, Spencer and Brooker. We go and see that for some reason, and I just was very flat on the flick. It was just like, this isn't good. I didn't want this.
No.
But then seeing it maybe 15 years later.
Huh? Is this just viewing two?
No, this is viewing three. I rewatched it with my daughter a couple of years ago for my first rewatch. And I thought, oh, do you know what? This is actually perfectly fine. This is pretty entertaining. It whips along. I really like how it looks. It still has that kind of film quality to it. All the things that people shat on, like that everyone hated the fridge bit with the nuclear bomb. They hated it. They wanted to change Jumping the Shark to calling it Nuke the Fridge. And it's just fun. It's a fun, like, notion. Like, the whole notion of Indy is, like, he keeps getting into trouble and situations get worse and worse, whatever happens. And then he manages to find his way out. That's the essence of the character. And so it's quite funny when he ends up in a nuclear testing site and the only way out is to climb into a fridge.
It is worth saying for people who are listening that didn't watch the film that it is a bit more complicated than that. He climbs into a fridge where there's a label that says lead-lined, and he closes the door just in time, and then he is blown through the air about a mile.
Yeah, enough distance. All right, so there's...
Enough distance so that he can get out and look at the mushroom cloud from really far away, but the impact of the air travel inside the fridge didn't injure him or kill him. I think there are plenty of things in all of the indie films that are completely unbelievable, so I'm not... particularly criticizing that, but I do understand why people found it a little galling at the beginning of the film. It feels a little bit like you have this memory of what Indiana Jones is, who was a guy with a whip and some smarts, you know, and he could throw a decent punch and he was lucky and he's like Jackie Chan, right? Like he kind of, you know, sometimes falls into luck. it felt like I had a memory of who that character was as a child. And then I watched this in 2008 and I was like, oh, he's a superhero. He's unkillable. Like he's just flown a mile through the air in a fridge and there's no issue at all. Like I think that's why people were upset about it.
Upset. I mean, grow up. He's fucking survived the opening of the Ark of the Covenant. All right.
Sure.
He's survived. Yeah,
that's not comparable.
Also, actually, he's drunk some magic water at the end of the Last Crusade. And even though the old knight says once you pass the thingy, you know the effects wear off. Come on, some residual magic Jesus juice lives in his veins. Uh-huh. It's just the whole thing was based on their Spielberg and Lucas's like fondness for those cinema serial type things. Where these ludicrous things happen. It's well in keeping with the inspirations that made the series. And anyone who doesn't like it, I think this is silly. You're too old. Shut up. This kid is this movie is for 10-year-olds. All right, so be a 10-year-old. Watch it like a 10-year-old.
You could be a very analytical, smart 10-year-old like me. I would have pointed at this as a 10-year-old and said, this is a step too far. The only other examples you gave, and I acknowledge at the beginning, like there are plenty of examples in these films of things that, you know, are very, very unlikely or in some cases stupid. But the examples, the comparisons that you gave are not direct comparisons.
What comparisons did I give?
You gave the comparison of...
I sometimes say things and don't remember what I've said. And this is minutes ago. You're a leaky bucket boy. I just say things.
You said stuff that was like related to the occult as a comparison for being blown through the air a mile in a fridge. That those things are not direct comparisons. If you can think of one other thing in the canon of indie where there's like a physical injury or something like that, where there is an equivalent of being blown a mile through the air in a fridge, then what is it?
I've got one. Okay. Yeah. Temple of Doom. They're in a plane at the beginning of Temple of Doom. All right.
Yeah.
The plane is going to crash into a fucking mountain. No parachutes. That's what Short Round says. So what do? They hop into a inflatable rubber dinghy. All right. They jump in. This plane is going to crash into a fucking mountain. They jump out and they're like, they're probably, I don't know, 1,000 meters into the air, a mile. And at some point on the descent, the inflatable dinghy inflates because they pull a little ripcord, and then they land at the top of the mountain, and then they whiz down all the way down, and they're like, this is the horrible stunt double work in that sequence, horrible. And then they eventually fall it down a fucking waterfall. The whole thing is insane.
I'm not saying it's not insane.
Do you know what? It's equivalent.
No,
to,
it's not.
It is
no,
absolutely.
No, like, it's not. No,
they
it's
would
not.
Die. He would die in both. It is. He would die in both.
Okay, give me my retort. Give me my retort. Inflatable things would slow down a bit in the air. Now, just let me clarify. He would die. I'm not saying he wouldn't die, but he would less die. He would less die
All right,
than in the fridge. Inflatable things slow down. He landed on a decline so that he was like taking some of the force of the away. So then he sped down the thing, and then inflatable things float. So again, he would die, but he would less die than being in a fridge that flies a mile through the air and then lands stop dead in some rocks.
Listen, it's like when you wrap an egg in you put it an egg into a toilet tube and you wrap it in bog roll, okay, you protect the egg and you can throw it as far as you like and the egg inside is protected. He is the egg and he would be fine. You know, you do those little science experiments where you have to protect the egg.
No.
You do the equivalent of putting it in a lead-lined fridge, right? And the egg doesn't smash. Okay, he's the egg. Why the people who've made that bomb site have put a fridge, one fridge? Because if one fridge is flying a mile, all the fridges are flying a mile.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, you'd be dangerous to be being rained down on by fridges.
Exactly. That's my only issue with that sequence. Otherwise, it's pristine. It's fun, and it's just like, come on, mate. Oh Christ, the phone's ringing. Hello.
Hello. Is that Smeg?
Yes. Hello. Yeah. This is Dave Smeg.
No. Oh. Did you find the company Smeg?
I'm the CEO, Dave Smeg. Why would you
just answer the phones? I wasn't expecting to speak to you. I thought I would speak to someone on the help desk.
Well, this is why our fridges are so expensive, because I'm on the front line.
Right.
What's this in regarding?
Fridge just landed in my garden. It just crushed my shed. It was a Smeg fridge, and you know, one of those big pink ones from the 60s. And
do you know which model it was?
No, it's obviously not really survived the fall, because it's clearly flown over a mile, so it's actually broken apart completely.
That doesn't sound like a Smeg fridge. Smeg fridges are notoriously lead-lined. And
it says Smeg on the door.
Right, well, there's a lot of copycats. Are you sure it doesn't say Smug or Snug or Smeeg or Smeck?
I'm 99% certain. I want to say as well that there's an awful lot of red liquid oozing from inside. And I'm a little concerned that...
Why haven't you called the police or the fire brigade?
Well, the only bit of the fridge that survived had the helpline number on. And I thought, what better use of a helpline than this situation?
Do you want a replacement? Oh, hang on. It's not your fridge, though, is it?
It's not my fridge. No. Okay. Is it your? I mean, it's yours.
You got a Smeg?
No.
What's your fridge?
Armitage Shanks.
Right. Yeah, they make good. They make good fridge.
They make toilets as well, but
you're talking to Dave Smeg here. I know.
Right.
I know what they do as well. I guess thanks for the information. I don't really know what I can do to help you.
Well, send someone around to get it, because it's destroyed my shed.
That's not a service that we offer.
Well, I mean, do you make a habit of launching fridges through the air? Because it's a Smeg fridge and it's just crushed my shed. And I don't know who else I'm supposed to call about this, because...
I'm concerned about your chain of reasoning,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
A fridge lands in your garden,
yeah,
and you think that that's the responsibility of the maker of the fridge, not anything... You think we're launching Smeg fridges?
Well, I assumed you were testing. I can't imagine another reason why a Smeg fridge would be flying through the air. I assumed you'd be stress testing it, and let me tell you, it's not survived the fall, so this one's a failure. And I am aware, obviously, that the notorious Smeg factory is only 10 minutes drive away, so I'm assuming that's where it's come from. Is that where you are, the notorious Smeg factory?
I might be.
Right. Because this is a local number I've called, and
I couldn't even tell you if that's the kind of test that we do.
Right. You're the CEO.
We do kinds of tests with our fridges. We put children inside to see if they can get out.
Hang on, why are you reading the Armitage Shanks motto? We do tests on our fridges.
I used to work there as well. That's why I spun out on my own. They nicked that from me, and that's partly right. Why I had to leave and create Smeg.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
The name.
Hmm. Don't...
What does it make you think of? Because...
Listen, I'm a man, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was a boy. I went to school. I'm just trying to reclaim the word. So, in fact, that was the reason why I went into the whole white
fridge
goods.
Business.
I mean, a white goods, you know, because that's what Smeg is. Smeg is a white good in a way, isn't it? It's that kind of cheesy... The cheesy thing around, and I know that, and that was the inspiration. And so I wanted to, have you hung up? You hung up just as I was,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, go on. That's disgusting. I was thinking of the dragon from...
Schmaug.
Schmaug, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was because of the
Smegma. It's because of Smegma, right.
Yeah, yeah, and I wanted to turn the white good into a good white good. A good white good, because, you know, that's a bad white good. And I wanted to, like, when someone said Smeg, I wanted them to think of something chilly and that you could rely on, not something...
Chilling?
Yeah, and like disgusting and like, sorry, God, it makes your fingers stink. You know, doesn't it make your fingers stink? That's the thing about it. And that's what gets me, you know?
Are you saying smeg fridges are made with smegma?
No.
No.
No, not literally. I wanted to turn word and make, I wanted people to think of something else. And so the chilling nightmares of the bullies who would make fun of me and my name, Dave Smeg. Dave Smeg. Imagine that. You're 10 years old and that's
It's pretty hard, yeah. Because that's the thing. I always thought the reason you called it Smeg is because your name is Smeg. I didn't realize
my name
that
is
in
Smeg.
I know it is. I'm just saying. Right. I'm just saying. I didn't realize in your origin story there would also be this connection to smegma. I thought it would be enough that your name was Smeg. That's why you would call your company Smeg. But yours is that your name is Smeg, and there's also this connection to smegma.
Well, because of the bullies.
Hey, I found out something quite fun about Indiana Jones. Would you like to find it out also?
I would love to.
Well, I got asking Colin after I watched the film. We had a quick chat, Colin and I, about the film. And one of the things I asked Colin was if anyone else other than Harrison Ford had been considered for the role of Indiana Jones. Because it...
Tom Selleck. Sorry, that's the most well-known fact about Indiana Jones. I can't believe I asked you to be the host of this show. That is absolutely piss poor.
There are seven other names here.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Do you want to name all of those as well? Or?
No, that's the only one I know.
That's the only one you know?
That's the famous one. Seven, that's impressive.
I can't believe you're the expert of this show. Anyway, of course, we all know Steven Spielberg wanted Harrison Ford from the start. Mm. But George Lucas hesitated, apparently, because he'd already cast him in American Graffiti and Star Wars, and he didn't want him to become, quote, his De Niro. So they did look at a bunch of alternatives to Harrison Ford. One of them was Tom Selleck, as you already gleefully pointed out. This is the most famous, as Colin says, so you would know, almost indie. He actually won the role. Did you know that? Like, he was going to play the role, but CBS wouldn't release him from his Magnum PI contract. There was even a test screen of him with Karen Allen, who's the actor in this film as well. And he's great in it. It's apparently just a very unlucky timing. Now, there are seven other names here. I'll tell you what Colin says about these names and see if you can predict them. Okay. So there was someone that reportedly passed on it quite early, thinking that it was too similar to Pulp Heroes. That was one of the names. There was a person who considered it but turned it down to do another film. If I tell you the film, you'll get it. So we'll come back to that as another clue later. There was someone unavailable because of Saturday Night Live scheduling. There were three people who were all floated at one stage, but either weren't interested or didn't fit Lucas's sense of tone. So we'll come back to those. And finally, there was someone who was on a later shortlist, although it is hard to imagine this person working in the role. So of those things I just floated, which do you like the most? Where should we come back to? And what can I clue you more on?
I mean, Saturday Night Live. Mm. If this is 81, it's going to be the 81... 82 for Raiders. It's going to be, it's either Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, or...
So Chevy Chase is one of the names here. It's not that one. Chevy Chase is one of the seven. He was floated at some stage, but either wasn't interested or didn't fit Lucas's sense of tone.
That's one of the names, right?
That's one of the seven, but it isn't the one that was listed unavailable because of Saturday Night Live scheduling, no. There's another person.
And it's not, what if it, is it Bill Murray?
It's Bill Murray.
Jesus Christ, how wrong.
Can you imagine?
So wrong.
It really would have been bad, yeah. He would have played it so languid. Well, there's one other comedian on this list who is often in a double act pairing, but also has featured as the lead in a film that we've already covered on this podcast before.
Steve Martin.
Steve Martin, yeah, is one of these seven names. We're only left with some serious actors. One of them How do I go about this? Okay, the one that is hard to imagine the version working would have said his name like this: Indiana Jones.
Oh, Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken was apparently on a shortlist at one point to play Indiana Jones. That would be very sinister, I think. Sinister Indy. I can't really imagine that working at all.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's just not right.
No. Beyond that, there is someone on here who played a villain in a Batman film.
So, what, Jack Nick?
Jack Nicholson, yeah. Was in the floated at some stage section. And then the final two, this person was considered but turned it down in order to play in Cutter's Way.
Jeff Bridges,
yeah. Which I can kind... He's the first one I can kind of see how that could work. It would be very different, but I can sort of imagine that.
Yeah, he's still got a different... Just a different energy. These are all big... We're naming big actors, and this is just why there's only one person. Yeah. You know, Harrison Ford is the only person.
I think if any of these other people had taken it, save maybe Tom Selleck, I guess, I don't think there's more than one film, right?
I mean, if Tom Selleck, and he was great, if he was great in this screen test, it's just going to be Raiders, and that's it. You know, yeah. There's no more. It's why chat about the idea that this film was going to pass the torch to Shia LaBeouf is just nonsensical. There's just no Indiana Jones is Harrison Ford. There's no other film. There's no series without him. I know that there was the young Indiana Jones, but that was a TV thing that no one watched, and it's just this bollocks thing that no one gives a fuck about, you know?
Well, the last name reportedly passed on it early, thinking it was too similar to Pulp Heroes, was Nick Nolte.
Yeah, he's just too... Yeah, he's gruff.
Too serious, yeah.
Too serious, and he just doesn't have it. No one has it.
No one's got it. Is there another actor working that has the combo?
There's one guy who can do this now.
One guy?
There's one guy.
Christian Bale. how old is he? What decade is he in now?
He's, as old as Harrison Ford was in Last Crusade, maybe.
Right.
He's a silver fox. He can do action. He can do comedy. He can do heart. He can do seriousness. It, you know, he's the full package.
Start listing films he's been in.
Mr. George Clooney could... George Clooney could...
Come on, man.
If you give... You
Clooney's
back,
no... He's no indie. He's no indie. Absolutely not.
No, he's... But I'm saying he fits the wheelhouse. I'm saying modern actors now, and he's too big and too good for it. And I wouldn't want to put him in a series like this. But he's the actor who ticks all those boxes. Bradley Pitt can't be indie. He's too hardened, you know. I know he can do goofball. I've been watching a bit more goofball. Bradley Pitts, and I when I was slagging off Bradley Pitts, mm-hmm. I'd forgotten what a good goofball he is.
Sure, the pit. He is a good goofball. I can kind of see what you mean with George Clooney. I'm not so sure that I'm completely on board. However, I did also ask Colin if they were casting Indy now for actors between the ages of 35 and 45, who would they pick? You know, what do you think? No, Gosset is not in the list. He's not
really?
In the list. Not there. I think Colin's done a pretty good job with this list, actually. Like, I think it's a little... There's one name on here. He's described as the most obvious studio pick right now. Classic leading man. Look, easy confidence and a throwback presence. He could do the lighter adventure tone as well. We talked about him pretty recently, Adam Richmond.
Harris Dickinson?
No. Glenn Powell.
Who? Colin Powell?
Oh, Glenn Powell. Not Colin Powell. No.
No. Fuck you. We were talking about Glenn Powell recently. He's... Go on, tell everyone your Glenn Powell thoughts.
I couldn't imagine him as Indiana Jones.
No, but dig into... There's something going on there, right?
Glenn Powell? There's nothing happening. There's nothing going on.
Yeah, dig more. Come on, give me more.
You want me to say more?
More anti-Powell.
It's not. I'm not anti Powell. I quite enjoy watching Powell. I think he's got, you know, there's a certain sense of charisma to him, but he's like a shell. You know, he's sort of absent of. I feel confused by his whole thing, his whole presence. Like, I don't mean. I think he's the new Keanu Reeves, in the very uncool way, in the sense that he's so blank. That really, you know, he could be anything. He could be indie. That's part of the reason why I think he could be indie. I think he could do anything a studio wants.
Yeah, but no one could be indie.
No, obviously no one could be indie. I do understand.
Only Harrison Ford could be indie.
I think there's another. I think there's one other person on this list that I hate that you would think might do an okay job of indie. They wouldn't be indie because, as you've said, no one can be indie. But of the people living who are available to do it at this time, there is someone here that you rate.
Okay, well, also, I'll tell you, there is someone who I rate who you don't know about. Alden Ehrenreich.
I know who that is.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just being a
dickhead. I don't know who that is.
That's the guy. He played young Han Solo in the Solo film.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's
just going to go around taking up Harrison Ford's jobs.
Yeah, I think he's really fantastic in that, and he's a really good actor. He's got the swagger.
Yeah, tell you what, get Paul Bettany in as well to play the villain. Oh. I'm all on.
Oh, do you know what? I've changed my mind. I would watch that film because I really, really. That's the one thing. Like Solo is a very long, muddled movie, but
I thought it was okay.
He's great. Yeah, it's. But I mean, I would love to have done it on this podcast. It would have been a great forgot you forgot. But yeah, Alden, I don't know how to say his surname. Ehrenreich.
Yeah, Ehrenreich.
He's fantastic, and he could redo Blade Runner. He could redo Witness.
Oh, what's that one in the jungle?
He could redo The Mosquito Coast.
The Mosquito Coast.
He could do them all. I'd watch them all.
The name here that I think you're going to pause for a moment to consider before disregarding, because I've now told you that you'll like it, is Bradley Cooper.
Why would you think I like that? I don't like Bradley Cooper.
Because he can do... he's got the range to do both, and you do like Bradley Cooper. You're always defending Bradley Cooper whenever I'm shitting on him. You do like him. You think he's a good actor. You watch films with him in.
No, I don't. Didn't watch A Star Is Born.
But you love that song. You cry at that song.
Oh, Shella. It's just because of the Oscar performance.
And you hate the Oscars and you haven't seen the film. You must like Bradley Cooper. I
dislike
love him as Bradley
Rocky
Cooper.
Raccoon.
Right, there you go. There you go. You love him. You just said it. You love him as the raccoon.
I'm concerned about what he's done to his face.
Okay. Hey now.
Listen, that's fine for me to say. I feel sad. I feel sad that we live in a world whereby actors, people are doing that. He looks weird.
No, stop it.
Oh, what am I? But like, it makes it. These are people who are, they're not just actors. They are. They're personalities who live in our lives, and they're not just, there isn't just the role and the performances. There's everything out of that. And if you stop buying into an actor based on like who they are, it's very hard to buy into the roles they play. I'm not having a go at people who have plastic surgery.
I agree. I'm not saying that wouldn't have an impact. I just think we should draw the line on this podcast, and we shouldn't talk about people's physical appearance.
Anything off the trolley, dears?
Shia LaBeouf, he gets it in the neck, doesn't he? Old Shia LaBeouf. They hated him in this movie.
Right, they didn't like it, did they?
The fans, the aggrieved indie fans, they were outraged about the notion that the gossip was that, oh, they're going to pass. Even before the film came out, the chat was that, oh, maybe they're going to pass the torch, maybe they're going to pass the torch. And because of Transformers and because of Shia LaBeouf, people were set to not like him and reject him in this role. And he's not great, but he's perfectly fine. He's kind of semi-disgraced these days.
Right, yeah.
Because of... Because
he was sued by his ex-girlfriend, right?
Yeah, FKA Twigs. Mm-hmm. But then Mia Goth, his ex-wife, she's come to his defence as well. I think, you know, he's admitted all kinds of substance abuse problems, alcoholism, etc. Yes. I like him as an actor in, say, Fury, when he's doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he's like as a human being. He seems like both a very self-important, pumped-up douchebag, but then also kind of quite interesting character.
He seems kind of intense, let's say. You know, but he rides the line, doesn't he, between someone who could be praised for putting the kind of effort that he does into everything that he does, and then the other side of that line, which is that he takes it too seriously. Do you know what I mean? He's sort of, he teeters on the balance there. And sometimes I watch him in something and I think, wow, this guy is incredible. He's so charismatic. He's so compelling to watch. Other times I watch him and I think, okay, buddy, chill, just chill out a little bit. You know, you don't need to bring, like, he does it in this film, which is to his credit, I think. He ekes out every possible bit of realness to this, you know, bastard child of Indiana Jones character that he's playing. And it's evidently absurd. And the situation doesn't really call for it. But he takes it really seriously. He plays the character with a level of intensity that I can't imagine that many other people using. So, you know, on the one hand, obviously a talented guy. On the other, you're sometimes a little too intense for my tastes.
I remember that show he was in, Even Stevens, like a Disney show. He plays this goofball, annoying kid.
Right.
And he's just very, very funny. This very, very funny young, like, I don't know, 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Real, like, physical humour and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made this film Honey Boy. That's where he met FKA Twigs.
Yeah.
And then that's about, he plays his dad in that movie.
Right.
And it's this sort of abusive dad relationship with the child star.
You know how some people go to, I don't have this in the therapy I go to, but like some people write letters to their parents or siblings or family or whatever. They don't send them, but they as homework for their therapy, they'll write a letter imagining that they might send it, and then the experiment is to see what they say. I remember when I read that Shia LaBeouf made that film, because I never watched it, and thought, like, he's taken that really seriously. That's probably where it started, is something like that, and is turned into him actually playing the character of his own abusive father. That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Well, I love him because I loved the film Holes. I thought that was a great film. That's that one. Is it a Disney film? Probably.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, Disney. Is, yeah. Set out there in the desert in America, and he plays the character Stanley, who gets wrongfully sent to a sort of children's prison camp and made to dig holes looking for this treasure. He's amazing in that. He's so fantastic to watch. He's in almost every scene. He really carries the film well. And you watch that, I watched it relatively recently, actually, within the last year. You watch that and you see him act and you think, God, he's going places, that kid. He's a special kid. And I think that's broadly speaking, that's true. He's done his franchise stuff. He will have made a lot of money. He's been in more than his fair share of, you know, quote unquote interesting films. He was in both the Nymphomaniac films, which I think are very, like, pretty good. He's in American Honey, which is far too long, but is an interesting, good film. I thought he was really good playing John McEnroe in Borg McEnroe. Don't know if you watched that film.
I didn't. It didn't get very well reviewed, so I didn't bother.
It's not a great film, but he's really good in it. Also, yeah, I mean, I like him. I bought him playing alongside Tom Hardy in, again, not a great film, but, you know, some decent acting performances in Lawless. And as I said, the intensity that he absolutely does not need to bring to Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is to his credit, I would say. Let me stay with Shia LaBeouf for a moment. We've kind of already argued off mic, so let's not bother reprising that, about whether or not this film was an attempt to pass the torch. There are, you know, there are one or two quotes that suggest that it might be. However, I do agree with your overall point, which is that it's insane to attempt that, whether or not that's true. So what I did want to ask you, though, was... Let's play another Colin-related game. Can you think, I asked Colin, of any other examples of big franchises that successfully passed the torch like this film may have tried to? Now, Colin, for my money, has only listed one example that I definitely agree with, and I'm curious if you'll get that.
Well, Bourne tried to do it to Jeremy Renner.
Legacy appears, but I don't think it can count as a success.
No, it doesn't count as a success. It should have been, because I think Legacy did a grand job, pills or no. I would have loved more and then we've got Terminator, that doesn't pass on anything. It's always Arnie.
Uh-huh.
The Alien series, they never tried to really fully pass it on from Sigourney Weaver.
No.
She's always like, oh, we're going to bring her back.
Sure. There are a couple of examples here, I will say, that are like whole casts rather than just one person, which I think is a slight cheat, because I think it is possible to recast, not necessarily like recast characters, but like to try to pass the baton on from multiple characters to others. That I'm not really including that within my purview here, but for those reasons I will say that Star Wars and Star Trek are both listed.
But that doesn't count. Those are franchises. That's like saying a reboot.
Yeah.
You can't do reboots.
Well, it's just multiple cases of torch passing, right? Like The Force Awakens is an example where you could say
multiple cases of torch. This is a key example of multiple cases of torch passing. I think you'll find.
Rather than there being one torch, there's actually seven torches, and they're all passed by their elder down to their respective younger. So I'm discounting those. There is only, for my money, one franchise movie where the main character has been replaced for another main character. Let me tell you what Colin says about this. This film reframed the story around the new character while keeping the old character... Creed. There you go, you got it. Creed. While keeping Rocky as mentor, the emotional continuity without pretending that the new guy is Rocky. The tone, the themes, the performances, they earned the transition real credibility, which is totally, it's very, very true. I think that's true. Creed is the only example I can think of that has really done that successfully, where it's been a film that was critically acclaimed as well as commercially well received. Sly Stallone does it again, except he doesn't.
Except Creed forgot, mate.
There's two of those films, and like the first one is remembered fondly, I think.
There's three of them, and no one talks about any of them anymore.
People talked about the first one for some time.
Yeah, not anymore. I'm saying we could do it. It would be fun to do.
Okay, maybe we could. You could get me on that if you add it to your list. Mr. Franchise. Hey, my name's Mr. Franchise.
Welcome to Reborn.
Should we play the box office game?
I'd love to play the box office game. For the movie Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, and just in case anyone wants a little another little cue or tease, this is where it happened. That's all I'm going to say. This is where it happened.
What's it?
The schism, the breach of trust.
Right. Right.
I won't say any more. But let's play the game.
Are you having flashbacks?
It's just hard to commit to something with the fullness of my heart, having had my heart broken,
right?
In a way,
yeah.
Like I feel like
that's what she said.
I feel like I have a sense of humor about myself, and then also, when it's brought into sharp relief that how little a sense of humour about myself I have, that's when I'm at my most uncomfortable.
Right. Vulnerable.
Vulnerable, and like, oh, the realisation of like, oh yeah, no, I'm easygoing. I don't mind. I don't mind being made a fool of.
Right.
And then the realisation that how much, and when that actually happens,
this is who I really am.
Someone who's really close to me, and then that happens. And
right.
So it's like, oh,
yeah,
that kind of, you know.
God, that sounds horrible, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know.
Yeah, crazy.
Best mate, the best mate in the world.
Who would do that to you? What a strange. Well, if you ever want to tell me who it was, I'll get them for you, buddy. Okay, box office game. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, also known as Indiana Jones y el Reino de la Calavera de Cristal. The Billy Crystal. Now, brackets estimated budget, please, for this film. Now, we know it's going to be a whopper, a real whopper, but how much H is in there?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be big. It's going to be a big old budget. 2008.
The financial crash hadn't happened by this point, because they would have spent the money just before then, I would have thought.
Before then, yeah.
Before then.
They've got to pay everyone. They've got to pay Stevie. They've got to pay George.
Oh, they got to pay them.
They've got to pay Harrison.
40? 40 doesn't get out of bed for anything less than 50, does he? 40?
Well, for this, it's like, well, come on. Make me do it, you know.
Yeah.
They wanted to, like, the reason why it'd been so long is because George and Stephen and Harrison always had to kind of locked in on what they were going
to
do.
Yeah, they needed to agree on this premise artistically.
I think that, yeah, because before there were other versions of, there were other iterations, like stories that George had said, nah, I don't want to do it.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I guess we're not doing it.
Indiana Jones says, and the Inches of the Jungle Kong.
Right.
Indiana Jones and the alien that came back in time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones and the penis that impregnated my mother. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that, you know, Lucas is like...
Indiana Jones and the breach of trust
still going.
During the box office game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
George is... He'll think, oh, hang on a sec, I can't have Harrison Ford because I don't want to be Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
And it was like... Where, you know, his judgment sometimes.
He could be so lucky to be Martin Scorsese. Come on, let's be honest.
Let's say 200 million.
Well, pretty close, 185. That's within the 10% right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Pretty impressive start, all things considered. Now, opening weekend US and Canada, May 25, 2008. What does this movie take? Well, let me first ask you, what does this film need to take to be considered a success on opening weekend? And then what do you think it did take?
See, right, I don't ask me that question because this is what broke our relationship, is that you started to make it about the numbers. And the whole thing is, it's about feeling. If I start thinking like, what, if I play by your rules, I then have to, I play this guess based on what the next guess is. And I don't want to do that. I'm not interested in that because... It's just not fun.
Okay.
So I just want to reach for a number.
Yeah.
I want to go, oh, jumper territory. This is, it's got to be bigger than Jumper territory. It's more like Logan territory. It's, this is a big tentpole picture.
Logan was 70.
Right. And it's not making that because I don't think it could, it, because even though it's, people are excited, everyone's also not excited at all.
Reach for the stars.
So it's 200, it's 180 odd mil, and it makes 60 mil.
Tell you what, pal, you've misjudged it. People were excited about Indy. They couldn't wait for Indy. They said, Indy, come back to me.
Right. How much?
100 mil.
Wow.
100 on opening weekend. That's a success, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. That's a big success. They were all rubbing their hands together saying, yeah, we knew. Get 40 back. Get 40 in the Berg together and George. We'll hang out on George's ranch and 40 in the Berg will make sweet, sweet moolah. That's what's happened here. Hmm?
Well, that's opening weekend. I mean, they've spent 180 making it. They're spending probably 80 marketing it.
Right.
So they still to wash their face with Pears soap. They still need to make a couple of more hundred mil.
Well, how much do you think they make gross worldwide?
I don't know. I don't think the word of mouth was good on this flick. Everyone was down on Shia. Everyone was like, me, ooh, aliens. I mean, I was as well. I was like, oh, fucking hell.
Me too. Aliens. Yeah. I think technically they're not aliens. I will say that.
Interdimensional beings.
Technically they're interdimensional beings. Exactly.
Shut up. I fucking hate alien conspiracies. Like, the shit like this and Stargate are just like...
Don't come at Stargate.
Oh, millions of years ago, so a very smart alien interdimensional race came to Earth and they invented maths. Fuck off. They built the pyramids, did they? Grow up. Anyone who believes that shit is a fucking moron.
Can I tell you, to find a way, don't come at Stargate, because Stargate... And this TV series Stargate SG-1 with Richard Dean Anderson et al., okay?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a terrific TV series. As far as, like, you know, Monster of the Week type sci-fis go, Stargate SG-1, and indeed Stargate Atlantis to a lesser degree, and indeed Stargate Universe to an even lesser degree. They're decent TV series, and I won't have you come after them. And also... Indiana Jones in the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is clearly just skimming off the top of the Stargate universe love. It's only gone and done it in a Mayan pyramid, because if it goes to Egypt, it's too on the fucking nose, isn't it? It's embarrassing. They should be embarrassed of themselves. Lucas and the Berg stealing this shit straight out of the mouth of Richard Dean Anderson. Hmm?
No.
He needs to feed his kids, that guy. MacGyver, he's famous for getting out of tough spots. Can't get out of this one.
They're rooting through. This is based on, like, just hack, conspiracy, like, crystal skull, alien shit from... Yeah. The stuff that they mentioned in the movie is where they got it from. Richard Dean Anderson, they're all just rooting in the same conspiracy trough.
Sure. Sure.
Anyway, I still like the film, but I also just think anything, all that nonsense.
Richard Dean Anderson could make a good Indiana Jones. He would. And whoever the guy is that plays Daniel Jackson on Stargate SG-1, he'd also make a great Indy. Because he kind of was it. He is the Indiana Jones character on Stargate SG-1. He's just less of a violent force, more of an intellectual.
Yeah. Yeah, played by James Spader in the film.
James Spader.
Yeah, or some people say Spader, but yeah, Spader,
right.
Spader. You know James Spader?
No.
The original. Kurt Russell? Do you even rate the movie? We should do Stargate on Forgot You Forgot.
Oh, James Spader. I know James Spader.
Yeah.
No, I don't rate the original movie. No, I only like the TV series. And I like Teal'c.
That's what you have to do.
No, I want Teal'c and I want to be left alone. That's it. And I want Teal'c. Sarah Carter. Yeah, Teal'c.
What's Teal'c? Who's Teal'c?
I'm trying to remember. Christopher about? Judge, I think the name of the character. Christopher Judge is the actor name. Teal'c of Chulak. Yeah, Teal'c.
Do you not rate the movie?
But no, I don't rate the movie. No, it's boring.
Yeah, no, it is. But then you love everything.
The thing about the movie is that the Stargate in the movie, which is the big portal that takes one to another place, only goes to one planet. And it's to this other place. It's boring, right? And they set the whole movie there and then they come back. And then the great expansion of Stargate SG-1
right.
is that they go to all different planets with the Stargate, and budget doesn't even stop them because every planet looks the same, but they go to all different ones, and every week they go to a new, and they have a new mission and a new, they always die nearly every time, but they don't. And sometimes stuff comes back through and it shouldn't. And there's the Goa'uld, who are the baddies, and, you know, there are a lot of baddies, as it turns out. And it really made me believe, watching Stargate SG-1, when I was a child growing up, it set me straight with a solid belief that the American intelligence system has really got my back. It's really looking out for me and protecting me from threats that I don't even know about, you know, like Stargate.
So what are we talking about?
You're trying to guess how much money overall was made by Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I'm not playing by Joe's rules. I'm not thinking about
don't think about it. Don't think about the 10x rule.
I think it made like maybe 620 million.
Pretty close. Not within the 10%, unfortunately.
That's a made-up thing that doesn't exist, but yeah, funny.
I mean, it does exist. It is a made-up thing, but it also does exist.
It's just the Father Christmas of fucking rules, arbitrary rules.
786 million.
Yeah, good, man.
Buongiorno. Nice sweater.
Okay, let's wrap this up. Should we do the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot with a view to catching out the other person on a movie they forgot to decide on the next episode?
I'd love to do that. Yeah, I think it's my turn.
I mean, I know it's your turn.
I will say, though, that next episode is not going to be this film, is it? It's going to be Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
And, glory be.
And what we decide now will be the episode in 2 episodes' time. In all things being well.
Yeah, who wants things easy? Have you finally got access to your old brother? Oh, missus. I've finally got access to me old brother.
Here's some films I'm going to pick for you, okay? I've got two here. Well, I've got more than two, but there's two that I think... I believe they would both be dead certs to get you. And I'm going to start with this first one that I know you will have seen. And I feel confident that you will have forgotten. And I don't think you'll want to watch it.
Okay.
The Day Shall Come. It's the least memorable film title of all time. I wrote it down 2 weeks ago, and then I just had to Google it to remember what it was.
Yeah, it's the Christopher Morris film. I think veto.
It's the Chris Morris film. Why are you vetoing it?
It's not a forgot you forgot. It's just a thorough disappointment.
I think it might be a forgot you forgot. I wonder if it's actually better than we remember it to be.
No. It's not, and it just didn't arrive, didn't do anything, and so it's not a forgot you forgot, I think. Sorry. It's not a veto. In fact, I veto my veto. It's not a veto. It's just that's a really bad
If you're unvetoing, then I'm going to argue with you for a long time. If you want to veto the film, then that's absolutely fine. But I think this is a forgot you forgot.
It's not.
It isn't a terrible film that doesn't qualify. That's nonsense. If you haven't forgotten it, then okay. But like, you can't unveto and then also get by on the notion that this is like not a forget. This is ridiculous. You're changing the definition of what a forget you forgot is.
It said no one saw.
Loads of people saw this film.
No, they didn't.
Okay, let me get the box office numbers for you. Hold on.
It just didn't arrive in culture or do anything. It's a nonsense to suggest. Based on, I'm using your own... the way you've argued about what films were forget-you-forgots, you would absolutely hammer me on the same logic. I'm sorry.
I really disagree with you. I'm disappointed. Not that we're not doing it.
What were the box office numbers again?
It made $50 million.
No, it didn't. You're a liar. Just like you lied last time.
Oh, I see. There we go. It finally comes out.
Jesus Christ. Sorry, it just doesn't count. The things that you've dismissed, don't make me go back and listen to old episodes to like hold up in your
go back.
You dismissed
them. Go back and okay, fine. Let's put it to the Discord. We'll ask that. Fine, it's okay if you're vetoing it. It's fine. But like, we'll put it to the Discord and ask, is this a forgot you forgot? It is. And you know that the Discord will say that it
no.
is.
No. Also, they didn't come up. They have no idea what the fucking forgot you forgot is. It's so... You and me do. We sometimes disagree. This is on one of them. And if we don't... If both of us don't agree, then it can't be a forgot you forgot.
Listen, when did a forgot you forgot become about everyone else apart from you? You saw this film... You forgot the film.
I didn't forget it.
So why didn't you say that? You said halfway through this sentence, you said, you've got me. Veto. I'm not watching it.
No,
you
I didn't. Literally no, I didn't said, say, no, I didn't
listen
say
Listen back
got
in
me.
The edit.
Said,
you'll cut your edit out, but you
I,
said got
no,
you
no,
said
no,
you
I
got
said,
me.
I said veto. I said I'm going to veto it because I didn't want to have this conversation with you.
You said you got me.
No, I didn't.
You did because you forgot the film.
It's the Christopher Morris film. I think veto.
Let me ask you this, okay? From my perspective, what's happening here is that we are now arguing because you are refusing to even veto a film that you don't want to watch. In order to win an argument that it's a 50-50 argument. Just veto the film.
Fine, you've got me. I wanted to...
He said it again, ladies and gentlemen. He said, you got me again. He said, you got me. He said it twice now.
You've got me on being a cunt. I wouldn't... I just think...
I don't want to watch it. I'm glad you've said no.
I think it's a shit suggestion. Oh, and I don't want to watch it. So that's why veto. Fine. So I'll stick to veto.
The goalposts have moved. You vetoed it, but now you've added in that it's a shit suggestion. Okay. Cock and bull story.
Okay, yeah, fine. What the fuck are you doing? Why are you picking these movies? But fine,
it's something I want to watch. I don't want to. We've just done a bunch of biggies. We've just done Indiana Jones. We can get away with a little cock and bull story, you know.
Okay, yeah, I'll do cock and bull story because it's. We can talk about the trip. We can talk about Coogan. I will talk about Coogan all day long.
God, do I want to do the cock and bull story? You can talk about Coogan the whole time.
Oh, just Coogan. So yeah, sure. Yeah, you got me on cock and bull. I still feel like going for these quite small movies.
All right, hold on.
You know, hold on.
Quite... Okay, here's one. Here's one I really want to watch. I downloaded it to take on the plane to New York. We didn't even talk about that. We should talk about that in the next episode, how we were both in New York at the same time. New York. I downloaded this film to take it on the plane. I didn't watch it, but I really want to. And I haven't seen it for... 25 years probably. It's E.T. I think E.T. has slipped from the cultural tongue. I think people aren't really talking about E.T. in a way that they were even 10 years ago. I don't think it comes to mind as one of the, you know, ex-canonical movies when we discuss that era anymore. But it was so big at the time.
I mean, I'd sooner rewatch E.T. I mean, I can't. I think I could allow it based on that reason. I haven't forgot. I forgot it.
Right.
But I mean, I like the idea we do Spielberg on the bounce.
Double Berg. Bring the Berg back. The iceberg. I want to dig into E.T. All right, let's do E.T.
Brilliant. Love it. Sorry, mate.
It's okay. We'll save the cock and ball. That's there every week. So...
Do you think a movie so UK-centric and small could possibly count as a forgot you forgot? And that's all. I just want to leave that with you.
It depends. I mean, I think the definition shifts, doesn't it? Obviously, evidently.
I mean, for you and me, I guess this is about you and me, and both of us have forgot both of that, and probably broadly forgot the day after tomorrow or the day after comes. But
the day after comes.
Oh, what was that called again?
I thought you were just throwing in the day after tomorrow as a rogue, like Gyllenhaal suggestion.
Yeah, no, I've never seen Day After Tomorrow.
Have you not? Surprises me. It seems like exactly your kind of film.